everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. And together, a big welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, the 19th of October, 2021. We're now be closing out this year, our 11th year on the radio. We'll begin year 12 in January in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station KVOI. And we are at 10:30. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening. On my website, it's buckmastershow.com. All sorts of good stuff there, including all of the shows. We usually post the program available for podcast within an hour or two of its conclusion. The Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Today, we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College, introducing our listeners to the very talented and dedicated educators of Pima Community College. And today we have one of those educators with us, Crispin Jeffrey Franco. Crispin is Director of Workforce Development at Pima Community College, and he is overseeing some really exciting things, talking about fast-tracking some professions that for folks who are really looking to better themselves, a fast-track way into a new lifestyle. Crispin, it's great to meet you, and we should point out, I was curious about your first name, based on a Louis LaMarre character in a Western novel.
That's right, and thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. But yeah, so my name is actually taken from a Louis LaMarre character named Crispin Mayo. So yes, it is unique. There really is no family lineage to it. It just happens to be a name in a book that my dad liked at the time that my mom was pregnant.
So. And there is a Crispin too.
There is. There is now a second one. That's
there
right.
There you go. Congratulations on that. And congratulations on this fast track micro pathways. This is kind of the way many colleges around the country are going. Overall, what are we talking about when we talk about micro pathways?
Yeah, so it is a way that that we're starting to see education and training go. For us, what a micro pathway really means is a condensed amount of time. So taking training that we already offer at the college, shortening that timeline to deliver it, and really packaging it in a way that a student can come in and get those training and that skill as fast as possible, and then get back out into the workforce in a higher paying, more stable job than they came into. So we have a couple things that have to be part of a fast track for it to kind of meet muster for us. Mm-hmm. One of those really is there has to be local demand for that occupation. So mm-hmm. There's a lot of programs at Pima Community College that we offer that have long-term benefit, but maybe there's not the exact current market demand for those positions right now in a way that we could do this. So we start with market demand. There has to be a family-sustaining wage. So an entry-level position really needs to be able to pay at least $15 on average or more, mm-hmm. Locally speaking. And then there has to be a pathway to continue to increase that earning potential. So no occupations that there isn't potential to build off of with more training, increase your lifetime earning, and continue to put your family in a better position for stability and financial security.
And you've got about a handful of professions that folks can get involved with. You've got IT, you've got emergency technicians, auto, and a couple of others in the building trades. There's obviously demand in these areas locally.
That's right. Yeah, we selected five disciplines essentially to focus on our initial mm-hmm. development of these pathways. And we've done this work really in collaboration with the Education Design Lab. So about a year ago, Pima Community College was the recipient of a grant through the Education Design Lab. We are one of six community colleges to be selected for the Community College Growth Engine Fund. So Pima Community College, along with five other colleges across the country, really have been working at this for a year. How do we design these? How do we vet the market viability of these programs? And then how do we deliver them to learners in a post-COVID world? So really that means, how do we do it flexibly? How do we make sure that working learners don't have to take time away from work or step away from work in order to get this additional training? How do we do it in a way where they
so
can
they keep an income going?
Exactly.
There's an income stream going while they're really looking at a really new career and in many cases, a lucrative career.
And they can do it in a relative.
We were talking before the interview that some of these disciplines, like in the auto tech area, you can get, you know, a matter of weeks.
That's right.
And the certification goes with it.
That's right. Yep. So all of the programs do have multiple industry recognized credentials
right.
that the student would learn. So whether they continue their training at PIMO or somewhere else, they have something that's tangible that says, I have done this work. I know these skills. But really, for most of the programs, the speed is really up to the learner. So if you have more ability to be in the lab, more days, more hours, you can really get through these programs quickly. Some of the programs, because of requirements, do take a little bit longer. But for the most part, we're talking 12 to 16 weeks for almost all of the programs.
COVID changed everything, didn't it, in your business?
It did. It did. It changed the way that we connect with learners, the way that we deliver education. You know, the college really had to pivot quickly to be able to meet the new demand. In workforce development, we're facing those same pivots and challenges. I'm sure it's not news to anybody that there are staffing shortages across
everywhere.
Southern Arizona in many different industries.
Yes.
And we're trying to affect that by making training more available and faster so that, you know, those who either lost their jobs or are hesitant to return to the job that they had before find a new opportunity to higher wages and more stability.
We're speaking with Crispin Jeffrey Franco. Crispin is Director of Workforce Development at Pima Community College, and we're talking about these fast-track micro pathways that the college has introduced. They're short-term courses that help existing workers upskill in specific areas, and then they come out with credentials that are highly recognized in their particular fields. What about typical students in your cohorts?
So we launched our first cohort in the last 2 weeks. We have about 50 learners currently in our fast track programs. What we're generally seeing is about 80% of those students are currently either unemployed or making less than $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So they really are the populations that we know the pandemic has really targeted the most directly and had the most negative impact on, which was the design and the goal of launching these programs really was to reach those learners. It's usually an adult, a little bit of an older learner, somewhere between 28 and 30 on mm-hmm. average. We have learners as young as 18 and all the way up to 61 years of age in the program. So it's a wide range in there. It's new, you know, new career seekers. We have some who have been in the industry but just needed those credentials mm-hmm. to be able to take the next step. And this was an easy, fast way for them to get those actual certifications so that they could continue in the career path that they already have chosen. So we're seeing multi-uses for them.
And not only are there jobs just about everywhere, but these particular areas like IT, the building trades, plumbing, and all these other areas, auto technicians, emergency workers, these are areas that there's a huge shortage of people.
There's a huge shortage
and these
now.
These are high-paying areas. You can make a lot of money.
That's right. High-paying, really stable.
Yes.
Industries and that was intentional. So it's not by accident that we ended with a whole bunch of capacity that needs to be filled. That really was by design. And as the Southern Arizona area continues to grow and we start to see more and more businesses come into the area, these are the same skills that employers looking to relocate to Southern Arizona are asking us, what does the pipeline look like? So this is just another way for us to also help spur economic development across the community.
If someone wants more information, what would be a good starting place, Crispin?
Our pima.edu website has a big feature about Fast Track. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the easiest way to go. We have a phone number, 206-5100. We'll get you directly connected to our corporate and community navigation team. So it's a team we have really designed to support Fast Track students since the training is expedited. It is borderline boot camp. We wanted to make sure that we had a team dedicated to servicing all of the fast track learners from I'm interested all the way through, I've completed the process. Now what do I do next?
Mm-hmm.
So when you join a Pima fast track program, you have a dedicated person who's there to watch out for you and make sure that you get everything you need.
And the price point to get in, is it depend on what the field is? I would assume
it does. Yeah, it'll be dependent on the particular program.
Because some certifications are a lot more expensive than
others.
That's right.
Yeah. Some of the certifications have added costs. Some of the length of delivery and just kind of the way that we can scale these programs, the cost does range depending on the program. One of the great things that we've been able to do through some really great partnerships. So Bank of America Jobs Initiative awarded Pima Foundation and Pima Community College a $1 million gift about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the funds that we received from Bank of America to really affect the same groups that we're trying to affect with Pima Fast Track is going to help offset the cost of these programs to learners who qualify. So if you're currently unemployed or making less than $15 an hour, you likely will qualify for financial assistance for these programs.
Great.
We're working with Arizona at Work to make sure that that any Fast Track student who might be able to qualify for services through Arizona at Work's programs have that opportunity to explore that. So, you know, we're really trying to make these as low cost as we can from a you know, sticker price perspective, but also create you know, mechanisms to allow those who are unemployed or underemployed an opportunity to take these at very little or in most cases no cost.
Crispin, I think you're building something very important here. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
Crispin Jeffrey Franco is the Director of Workforce Development at Pima Community College. If you're interested in anything we've been talking about today, pima.edu is a good starting place, so check that out. There's all sorts of information at that website all about Pima Community College. Crispin, thank you, and again, congratulations on what you're doing.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you having me.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. Crispin, do you like bakery goods?
Love them.
There you go. Chocolate croissant, would
Absolutely.
That sound good right now? Could you go for something like that? Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open right now for, still want to do breakfast? No problem. Open for lunch, of course. And their website's monasdanishbakery.com. Not only do they do wonderful bakery goods, but it's a they've got some outstanding coffee there, too, to go along with those bakery goods. So check it out, Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. The Buckmaster Show continues. Shelley Fishman in the waiting room, ready to go with his Tuesday Money Maker Report. Shelley, do you gonna give me a thumbs up on the market? Yeah, thumbs up. Market's doing pretty well. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And he is back live in the studio. Hey, Shelley, you had a great three-week trip up in northern New Mexico, Colorado. Boy, you put a lot of miles on the car.
Put about 2,000 miles on the car.
Goodness.
In a three-week period.
But you saw a lot of beautiful scenery.
You know, I've never been in southern Colorado. I skied central Colorado, of course, but never been a Telluride. Mm-hmm. Never been actually out of Santa Fe to Taos. Just some wonderful, wonderful things to see. Some of the driving is fairly challenging.
Sure.
But especially when you have the distractions of all the beautiful scenery.
Mm-hmm.
But well worth the trip and relaxed. You know, you're not doing super highways.
Right.
So you're kind of when it opens up and you know you can do the limit. That's fine. Otherwise, you get behind the. An RV, and you just go, oh my gosh, here I am behind an RV. Should I pass this guy or not pass this guy? And, and yeah. You know, as long as, you know, they're doing close to the limit, you just kind of breeze on, you know, behind them and let the day kind of take what it is.
Glad you are back, safe and sound. Medicare, open enrollment underway.
Yes, opened on Friday. This is for 2022 policies. And the open enrollment we're talking about here is for what's called Medicare Part C, which is also called Medicare Advantage. So the past year has been unusual. The reason, because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And so open enrollment literally didn't end until August 15th. So the new open enrollment for 2022 is normal, starts on the 15th of October and will end, I think it's the 9th of December. So you get about a month and a half, close to 2 months of time to make a decision about whether you want to stay with the insurance you have, make some changes, and during that period of time, you will not need to be qualified by the insurance company. If you go like policy for like policy, they must take you.
What is the difference, Shelley Fishman, between the Medicare Advantage plan and the Medicare Supplement plans?
So the Medicare Advantage plan is often called Medicare Part C. The Medicare Supplement plans are often called Medigap plans. So let's see how far into the weeds we can get with this.
It's an important question, though.
If you're on Medicare, mm-hmm. you have Part A, which is essentially hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. You have Part B, which is essentially doctor visits.
Mm-hmm.
You have Part D, which is drugs.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of like having Medicare in such a way that you can go anywhere in the country. You don't need to have referrals from your primary care physician.
They call it outer network if you go outer network.
Right. In fact, there is no network if you have Medicare or Medigap insurance. Mm-hmm. Any doctor who takes Medicare mm-hmm. will take your Medigap insurance. The Medigap plans are normally lettered from A to, I think they go through N now. Mm. It used to be through G, it used to be through F. Now they go all the way through N.
Really?
And when you scroll through them, it's very difficult in many cases to understand the differences between one to the other to the other. What you need to know about Medigap insurance is, number one, it doesn't cover drugs. So in addition to the Medigap insurance, you need Medicare Part D coverage if you're going to have some drug coverage. In addition, because there are no networks involved, the insurance companies charge you extra for Medigap insurance. And that extra can be, you know, as high as $700 or $800 a month.
Wow.
Based upon your health conditions and based upon the letter plan that you take. All of the letters from insurance company to insurance company are the same. So if you have a Part F, then your benefits in Part F with one insurance company or the other are all going to be the same. The prices, however, may not be the same. You will very often get an increase in that cost every year, and you will also still have Part B taken out of your Social Security every month. So buying Medigap insurance is, as a Medicare patient, that's about the most expensive way you can go. People do it because based upon their own health concerns and their own traveling and what they want, they feel it's better than risking the out-of-pocket potential that they would have if they just had Medicare.
Can you give us a kind of a ballpark? Is there an average monthly cost with Medigap?
If you start off at age generally 65, you're going to be in the area of $150 to $200 mm-hmm. a month, and then it goes up. Mm-hmm. Once you're accepted into a plan, they can't cancel you, but they sure can increase your insurance rates every month based upon pre-existing conditions and new conditions.
Do you need a physical before you get
it? You very often do.
Yeah.
It's either a physical or a healthcare affidavit. Mm-hmm. Now, that does not include, that's not counted in what we call this open enrollment period. This open enrollment period is basically for Medicare Advantage plans. A Medicare Advantage plan is what you hear about on television and what you're probably getting emails about.
Oh yeah.
And stuff in the mail. and whether it's an old television star, you know, on or Broadway Joe or you know, somebody who
we all have seen
recognize
them, yes.
Yeah. What they're trying to do is get you to call their insurance company's phone number so that they can give you a quote on Medicare Advantage from their company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you should know about Medicare Advantage is that each company's plan is a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
They all will take your monthly Part B insurance payments, and they will take it directly out of Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And so you now no longer have Medicare Part B, you have Medicare Part C, which is the Advantage plan from that company.
Mm.
Why does anybody want to do it? Because it's better than Medicare Part B normally.
Right.
You get a lot of great stuff. Do you get the new stuff that's available every year automatically? You do not. However, if you stay with a company from year to year, any improvements that they make in their plan will carry over to you from year to year.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I have Medicare Advantage, and each of the last 3 years, it's gotten significantly better,
mm-hmm.
Including eye care and dental care.
And the companies, Shelley, are very competitive?
Companies are very competitive. They negotiate with the doctor networks individually to set rates, which is why, you know, these plans literally are at no extra cost to you. However, you have to stay within the network if you're going to get the advantage of their copays, and that network is normally limited to a single state. And if you go to see a specialist, you're going to need a referral from your primary care physician. Wow. But all that together, and Medicare Advantage, which includes drugs, by the way, so you don't need a separate Part D policy. Medicare Advantage is absolutely worth looking into. Do not do it, I'm sorry to say, you know, Broadway Joe, do not do this by calling a single company. Call a health insurance professional who deals with virtually all of the companies.
Shops around for you.
Sure. Can really tailor the plan based upon what you need. And then at the end of the year, you get a nice review with that person and say, this really worked for me, this didn't work, should we stick with that plan or go with somebody else? You don't need the pressure you're going to get when you call an individual company. You need somebody who is going to have your benefits in mind.
Good advice. Good information today, Shelley, because it's very confusing. Shelley Fishman, hope you have a great rest of the week, Shelley.
You too,
welcome
Bill.
Back.
Thank you.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail and over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midway point of our program. This portion presented by our good friends at Green Things. We love Green Things for everything green for your garden, 3384 East River Road. They're in their 51st year over there by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a beautiful 13-acre site if you need anything for the garden. And you say, you know, I'd like some color for the autumn. Go buy Green Things. Talk to the very knowledgeable people over there. They will steer you in the right direction. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business on that 13-acre site, Zocalo Village, and their website is zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Zach Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the Arizona Institutes for Resilience, known as AIR, coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the UA campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Kind of good to see you, Zach, by the way. But it's kind of like a clearinghouse on climate, isn't it?
It's a clearinghouse on resilience, because it transcends a lot of different disciplines, and it really speaks to the expertise at the University of Arizona. So it's a great place to be. A lot of great people, a lot of great topics that we get to think about and work on. So yeah, AIR, as we affectionately known it, is a good place to be.
Well, and look at your own career. When you started out, nobody was talking much about climate change, I would venture to say. But look what your career has segued into. It's probably the hottest topic in the science community, and you're right there, buddy.
Yeah, I know it is. We said before, it's sort of a growth industry. And yeah, like when I first started, I do think, people talked about climate change, but it was less, at least in the United States, it was much less accepted now. And I think there has been a turn in public support. I mean, obviously it's still a hugely polarized topic in the US, but each year that goes by sort of adds more evidence to climate change and the causes and the impacts associated with it. So intellectually, there's a lot of fascinating questions that we get to work on and try to bring evidence to and help shape the narrative and be part of the education of this. You know, I get to work on the monsoon, which is just a fabulous topic. It's just the thing that everybody cares about here in the Southwest in terms of climate. So yeah, I feel really fortunate.
I was just reflecting on when I started talking first about climate change. I think on the television show, my show Arizona Illustrated, back in the late 90s, I remember interviewing Jonathan Overpeck, and known as Peck to friends like you, Zach. And Overpeck is kind of like a guru in the climate change business in academia. And he was talking about, I was thinking maybe it was like the late 1990s we were talking about it, and nobody was thinking much about it. And he's kind of predicting some things that actually have happened back in the late 90s that have kind of come true about our drought.
Well, right. Overpack, Peck, as we affectionately know him, who's at University of Michigan.
He went on to Michigan. He left Arizona.
But was a paleo or is a paleoclimatologist. And so he brought a perspective of the sort of deep historical record that helped us contextualize what we've been seeing. And, you know, the part of the challenge with climate is that, you know, we have a relatively short observational record. I mean, it goes back 100 years in some places, but those are fewer and farther between than, let's say, the last 50 years. And it can be difficult to, you know, sort of in our field, it's to sort of see the signal.
Kind of your big picture, because, you know, a lot of weather stations didn't even start, like, in our own area, maybe the late 1890s, keeping records. And do we really know how accurate even those records would be in Tucson back in the day, you know?
Yeah, and I think those are the longer records, like 110, 120, 130 years, something like that.
Sure.
But many of them didn't start until the 50s and 60s. And, yeah, like, they're... The stations themselves, you know, moved, and there's been a lot of great work, you know, to try to homogenize or to try to, like, make sure that these observations faithfully record what was actually going on, and for the most part, like, you're able to do some procedures to correct for some things like a station movement and that sort of thing. But getting back to Peck, I mean, he brought that deep historical perspective and was actually able to show just how much you know, recent droughts differ from droughts that we see in the tree ring that go back you know, hundreds, thousands of years. And
because I remember in the interview I did with him, one of the interviews, he was talking about the tree ring technology, which the University of Arizona is very famous for, and he was talking about a historic drought. I think it was the 1200s or 1300s mm-hmm. here in the Southwest that lasted like 50 or 60 years, maybe even 100 years.
Yeah, there's a few of those. I'm forgetting, like, there's like the medieval drought and
right.
A few other really really dry periods that stand out. And of course, when you look at the last, you know, 20 years, we're currently in another period that rivals some of the mm-hmm. the largest.
There was a big one in the 50s, mm-hmm. I think, in the
right. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And the difference, of course, this time around is not so much on the moisture side of the equation. It's really on the temperature side of the mm-hmm. equation.
Definitely, so, the temperature is driving that.
Yeah, and Overpeck is still you know, working on water issues here in the West, and is you know, producing important research and is out there communicating it. So good for him.
Well, we had a monsoon that nobody expected. Of course, when you were with us last, we were talking about the contest that was going on, predicting who was going to predict, and very few people were able to predict this record. Well, not record, third most.
Close.
Yeah, close.
We'll take it.
It was, I believe, a lady who had moved here from Albuquerque and had no idea
right
what the heck the monsoon was, and she threw a number out there and she won.
Yeah, so you're talking about our sort of monsoon fantasy game.
Monsoon fantasy.
That we trialed this year, and we had a great fun with it. We had 300 or slightly more people sign up for it. And yeah, we crowned a winner and a second place finisher, and the woman who won it had recently moved here from
I was thinking it was Albuquerque, yeah. But now I'm thinking maybe it was the Midwest.
Yeah, I think it was outside of the Southwest.
Yeah, I think it was, because she really didn't have any idea about the Southwest and the summer rains and all of that. Yeah.
What was?
So I don't think it was Albuquerque.
One thing that was interesting about it is that the last night, September 30th, it rained in Albuquerque and in El Paso, which are two of our stations, and it flipped the scoreboard around. So the first and second place people jumped up, mm-hmm. and yeah, so I guess it sort of proves, because this woman won, that you know, there's a lot of luck involved, and
yeah,
you know,
she won a nice weather station, and I think she was the article I read in the Star said that she needs some help as far as yeah. putting the thing together.
Yeah,
but
I
guess it's a pretty sophisticated little home weather station. It sounded really cool.
Yeah, she didn't quite know what to do. But the second place person was actually a graduate student at the University of Arizona, and it's sort of a weather nerd, so mm-hmm. He'll put that to good use.
And for the official monsoon summer rains were were taken at the airport station, and it was, what, 12-something?
Yeah, high 12s.
High 12
third
inches.
In the historical record.
Yeah, because we have our own little, very unsophisticated weather system up at our place in the lower central foothills, and Zach, during the summer rains, we had about 19 inches.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Well, that's the thing that I think is, we sort of fixate on one station because it's been there for a long time,
right.
And it's easy to talk about, but there's a whole bunch of spatial variability just at the scale of the city. I mean, you know, you go up into the foothills, there's a little bit higher elevation, the rain, a storm sort of, often begin on the mountains and sort of waft off of it, so there's more rain up there, and obviously at the top of Mount Lemmon.
But there are some dry spots. Mount Lemmon, yeah, that's an incredible story. More rain there than the city of Seattle gets annually. It was over 40 to 45 inches of rain up at
Spectacular.
Mount Lemmon.
Yeah.
But I was going to say there's some dry spots, too, where there was like 5 to 7 inches.
Right, and like... There's no real patterns to those dry spots. Like if you try to see if there's one area that's sort of like a donut hole versus others, nah, it's just sort of, it's more random. Like, but there's always going to be some spatial variability. But when it's a good monsoon, like it was this year, it's, there are dry areas, but they're still pretty
pockets.
Wet. Yeah, they're drier relative to some of the places that you mentioned.
But
in
they
the
are
airport.
Pretty wet.
It's not like last year. And last year it was similar, just the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
It was dry everywhere.
Let's talk about La Nina when we come back with Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, our Buckmaster Show climate contributor. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday afternoon in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll pause right here. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Kate Delaney. Join me tonight for a conversation about what's happening in the world that affects you. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. One of our great sponsors is Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. October in New Mexico is spectacular. The land of enchantment, and especially over in Silver City with the aspens turning a golden color. It's a great time of year to take the 3-hour drive east to Tucson. The planning of the trip can start right now. You can go to Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org, and I think you'll be very impressed by the many activities and some great places to stay. It's a great getaway from Tucson over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Dr. Zach Guido with us, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate, the assistant research professor at the Arizona Institutes for Resilience. Acronym is AIR. And Zach, it looks like it's time to talk about, are we into a La Nina, El Nino, El Nino? What does it mean for us?
Right. Yeah. So this is the time of year where we do, climatologists do look toward the tropical Pacific Ocean and the patterns of the sea surface temperatures and the atmospheric sort of winds to figure out whether or not it's a La Nina or El Nino or neutral state. And that does affect, as we've talked about here in the past, our climate here, particularly our rainfall. So best projections suggest that we're going to be in another La Nina event. It might just be sort of borderline weak to moderate event, maybe actually not even develop, but it's certainly not going to be an El Nino. And the projections in terms of rainfall is that we normally see here in the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, drier conditions. The chances for drier conditions are increased during a La Nina event, and that's because it influences those tropical sea surface patterns and atmospheric patterns sort of affect the flow of storms here in the Southwest.
I hope that's not the case, because La Nina traditionally does intensify drought conditions.
They do, and that's because they tip the scales to greater chances of drier than average conditions. So, you know, if I was betting, I would bet on it being a drier winter, which is not good, because at this time of year, sort of all of our eyes turn to the snowpack conditions, and we think about water supply, which is the critical issue here in the Southwest, particularly on the Rio Grande and in the Colorado. I will say this, though, like, whereas El Nino and La Nina sort of have a statistical relationship with rainfall in Arizona, New Mexico, the sort of hinge line is northern Arizona. So Colorado, which is where most of our water flow comes from in the Colorado snowpack and Utah snowpack, has less of a relationship, in most parts not discernible in terms of statistics, from El Nino or La Nina. And so it's still sort of a flip of the coin up there. So while we may have greater chances for drier conditions here in, let's say, Tucson, in terms of water supply, it's not the same thing up in Colorado.
Well, I was so happy flying back from Santa Rosa, California. We were flying Santa Rosa to Phoenix, and we flew right over Yosemite and Mount Whitney and the Sierra. And I'm going down, I'm looking out the window, and I said, that can't be snow, can it? I mean, and it turns out I had not heard the news that a couple of days before they had an early snow event in the Sierra. It was, you know, maybe some higher elevations had maybe a half a foot, but it was the earliest snow for the Sierra since 2017. So I'm hoping it's a harbinger of a pretty good winter up there.
Yeah, and you know, that was actually important, and there's more forecasted now for California as well, and early sort of late October rains. It's still sort of the peak or sort of waning edges of the peak of the fire season in California, and so that precipitation can really sort of put a halt on the fire season there, which is really important. And there is some more rain and snow forecasted for that part of the for most of California. So
does La Nina affect California?
It does. Again, there's sort of like a hinge line. Sort of central California, the relationship falls away, but Southern California, there is a positive relationship. So that is to say, when there is a La Nina event, it tends to bring drier conditions to Southern California, much like it does here in the Southwest.
But Colorado for us will be critical because of the watershed on the Colorado River.
That's right.
That'd be really big this winter.
Yeah, and people tuning in to this topic probably have read recently that, you know, this is the Colorado River will be in a shortage situation because the water levels in Lake Mead are projected to be below that sort of critical elevation marker. And, you know, last year, basically there was no recharge from the snowpack, or that is to say that if you look at the water elevation throughout the entire year, it never rebounded. And that was because there was just really low snowpack in Colorado. So we really need for the water supply a pretty robust winter. It's important also to say that there's been a recent change in the Colorado hydrology, and that is to say that just sort of like average winters don't produce as much runoff as they did in the past. And
temperatures,
yeah, and that's
the key.
Yeah,
I mean, it would really help if we get a good snowpack in Colorado, and we have around average winter temperatures here in the basin.
Yeah, and that's the critical thing. We now need more, you know, better winters, you know, higher snowpack winters, just to produce sort of average stream flow runoff conditions. So, again, it's hard to say what the expectation is for the entire winter. Let's say seasonal forecasting is pretty hard for that part of the country. So, we are, I think, hoping for the best. The Rio Grande, which we don't talk about too often, is in even a worse state. After the monsoon, thankfully for the monsoon, which provided a little bit of input for the Rio Grande and Elephant Butte, but just the Elephant Butte Reservoir, that is.
In New Mexico.
Yeah. But just to give you an idea, so that Elephant Butte Reservoir has a capacity of 2 million acre feet.
Right.
And it's projected to be at I think it's 60,000 acre feet at the end of this year.
Whoa.
Which is 3% of capacity. So it is virtually dry. And, their headwaters are in the San Juan Mountains of Southern Colorado.
Right.
And so that is also a major issue. And of course, people, farmers depend pretty heavily on that water for irrigation. So there's big impacts there.
I did not realize that water basin there in central New Mexico was basically, I think I heard you say, 3%.
Yeah, and
of capacity
prior to the monsoon,
almost dry.
Yeah, it's pretty much dry. I mean, prior to the monsoon, it was projected just to have 10,000 acre feet at the end of this year. And fortunately, the monsoon was robust, and it added a little bit. And those 50,000 acre feet are obviously something, but it also underscores that even when you have this robust and generational monsoon, it's really, in terms of water supply, it's really the winter snowpack conditions that matter.
All right. We'll keep our fingers crossed. And the next time we see you and hear you on the show, we'll have somewhat of an idea in a couple of months where we're at for the winter. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor and climate assistant research professor at Arizona Institutes for Resilience, acronym, I love the acronym, AIR. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show on money, is coming up next. On behalf of Dr. Zach Guido from the University of Arizona, John Couch, engineering and producing the show, we all hope you have a great afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow.